The following material is taken from Technician's Manual Liquid Heating Fuels, published by the National Oil Heat Research Alliance, copyright 2022.
Chapter 13, Heating Systems. Part 1, Warm Air Furnaces. Furnaces create warm air that is then distributed throughout the building via ductwork. A warm air furnace utilizes a metal heat exchanger that is designed to absorb heat from the burner flame and transfer that heat to the air that circulates through the furnace and into the house. It accomplishes this by having the burner fire into a combustion chamber, which is inside the heat exchanger. The resulting combustion gases are vented to the chimney via the flue pipe. This heated air is then distributed to the house through supply ducts, while cooler air from the building is brought back to the furnace through the return ducts. See Figure 13-1. The advantage of warm air systems is that air cleaners, humidifiers, and central air conditioning systems can be incorporated into the unit to provide a total comfort indoor air quality climate control system. Warm air furnaces have an integral blower that moves the air through the ducts. The airflow the burner creates is measured in CFM, cubic feet per minute. It is important that the blower and ducts be properly sized to move enough air across the heat exchanger to remove the heat from the furnace and to deliver it to the house. The normal operation of a warm air furnace is as follows. 1. Thermostat calls for heat and activates the burner through the primary control. 2. Burner runs, but the blower does not start until the heat exchanger is warm, preventing the circulation of cool air. This is accomplished with a mechanical fan control or electronic timer. 3. The burner and the blower then run together until the thermostat has been satisfied and the burner shuts off. The blower continues to run until the heat in the furnace has been dissipated and the fan coil shuts off, usually 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The blower may come back on after a minute or two, because some residual heat from the combustion chamber and heat exchanger has risen from the furnace to activate the fan control once more. There are different types of warm air furnaces for different applications. The basic operation of these is similar, but the configurations may vary. Highboy furnaces. The most common furnace is the highboy. It gets its name because the heat exchanger sits on top of the blower within the furnace cabinet. Return air is pulled in through the bottom of the unit and circulated upward across the heat exchanger and then out through the top of the unit. See Figure 13-2. Lowboy furnace. Where height constraints are a consideration, a lowboy furnace is often used. The blower is in a compartment next to the heat exchanger, thereby shortening the overall height of the unit. See Figure 13-3. Counterflow furnace. These units are commonly found in slab-type construction and mobile homes and look much like a highboy in outward appearance, but differ in that the blower is located above the heat exchanger. Return air comes in through the top and is distributed out through the bottom of the unit. In this type of furnace, an additional fan control is installed below the heat exchanger. The upper control turns the blower on when it senses the temperature of the air rising in the unit. The lower control turns the blower off when it senses a decrease in temperature of the air being blown down through the furnace. See Figure 13-4. Horizontal furnace. A horizontal furnace is often described as a highboy furnace on its side. These units are normally used in crawl spaces or suspended from a ceiling. The air travels through these units in a horizontal pattern, with return air entering on one side and supply air discharging through the opposite end. See Figure 13-5. The distribution system. Figure 13-6, following page, shows the main components and fittings found in a warm air distribution duct system. The distribution, or duct system, is comprised of three main parts. Plenums. These are box-like chambers connected to the furnace. There are two plenums in the modern furnace, one on the supply side and one on the return. The plenums should always be the same size as the opening on the furnace and should be at least 14 inches long or high. Trunks. These are usually rectangular ducts that connect to the plenum and are run out through the central areas of the house. branches. These are smaller ducts, either round or rectangular, which connect the trunk lines to the individual registers. It is a good idea to install locking dampers in an accessible location of each branch to allow for system balancing. Troubleshooting warm air systems. Not enough heat. When responding to a service call for not enough heat, or certain rooms in the house are not heating, first, see if the burner controls and blower are set correctly and operating properly. Then look to the distribution system. Most issues of these type are airflow related. Some common things to check are 1. Temperature rise. This is the difference in temperature between the supply air and the return air. To check temperature rise, measure the temperature out of the line of sight of the heat exchanger. See figure 13-7. To be sure that the temperature probe is not affected by radiant heat from the heat exchanger. If the appliance has a bypass humidifier, make sure the bypass is closed, or the results will be inaccurate. Manufacturers specify a recommended temperature rise, and the technician should verify that the appliance is operating within these settings. If the rise is too high, it could be too little airflow. Verify that the air filter is clean, the blower is at the right speed, and that the ducts are unrestricted. Figure 13-8. If the rise is too low, it could be too much airflow. Check the blower speed and look for openings in the return air ducts or the blower compartment. 2. Is there adequate return air? Ideally, there should be an equal amount of return coming back to the furnace as there is going out on the supply side. As a minimum, the return should never be less than 80% of the supply. 100% is better, and with air conditioning, 120%. If the ducts appear to be adequate, then check to see if any of the supply grills are blocked by furniture or rugs. 3. Is the system balanced? Check to be sure that the dampers are properly adjusted. 4. Do the ducts run through cold areas? Sometimes ducts are run through unheated areas such as crawl spaces, garages, or attics. When this situation occurs, the heat loss from a bare duct cools the air coming out of the register. Ducts should always be insulated to prevent this heat loss. Short cycling. If the burner is short cycling, or if the unit is regularly shutting off on high limit, the following should be checked. 1. Are controls set properly? 2. Is the blower operating? 3. Is fan belt broken or slipping? 4. Are pulleys slipping? 5. Are air filters plugged? 6. Are return air grills and ducts free of restriction? 7. Are supply registers and ducts free of restriction? 8. Is unit overfired? 9. Is the duct system designed to meet the requirements of the furnace? Testing for a leaking furnace heat exchanger. A combustion analyzer can be used to find leaks, cracks, or holes in the furnace heat exchanger. The high static pressure created by the system blower can pressurize the heat exchanger and force air to leak into the combustion chamber. The reverse of this is also true. High positive pressure in the combustion chamber can allow combustion gases to leak into the space heating side of the furnace and allow carbon monoxide to be carried into the conditioned space. O2 and CO2, or draft readings that change when the blower comes on, are indicative of combustion air, venting, or mechanical problems such as a cracked heat exchanger. Procedure for testing a heat exchanger by monitoring the O2 reading. 1. Follow the manufacturer's instructions to properly zero the combustion analyzer. Insert the combustion analyzer probe into the flue pipe. 2. Start the furnace and observe the oxygen reading for stability, 1 to 3 minutes. 3. When the blower starts, watch for a change in the O2 reading. If the O2 reading changes, there is a leak. Corrective action, attempting to visually find the leak. A. Sometimes a clean-out door or inspection door can leak. This is not a heat exchanger failure. The only requirement that new gaskets be installed or that the leak properly be sealed. B. If a visible defect can be seen, show it to the customer. See figure 13-9. C. On the service invoice, write that the testing indicates a leak in the heat exchanger. Do this even if you cannot find the leak. D. Inform the customer in writing that the heat exchanger has a defect and that it should not be operated. Attempting to repair a leaking heat exchanger is not like repairing other system components, because a leaking heat exchanger can allow carbon monoxide to enter the living space. Part 2. Hot water boilers and heating systems. A hot water boiler is a heat exchanger that uses the heat from the burner's flame to heat water. This heated water is piped to heat emitters in the building to supply space heating. The cooled water then returns to the boiler where it is reheated. Figure 13-10 shows a basic hot water heating system. Usually, the heated water leaves the boiler at around 160 degrees Fahrenheit to 180 degrees Fahrenheit and returns at 140 to 160 degrees Fahrenheit. Boiler designs. Boilers are constructed from cast iron or steel, and they could be either wet base or dry base. A wet base boiler has water surrounding the combustion chamber, while a dry base boiler does not. The most common steel boiler is the fire tube boiler, in which hot combustion gases flow inside long tubes surrounded by water. These fire tubes can be arranged vertically or horizontally within the boiler water. As the combustion gases rise through the tubes, heat passes through the wall of the tubes to the water. Figure 13-11 shows a dry base vertical fire tube boiler. In horizontal fire tube boilers, the hot gases travel to the back of the boiler and then pass into the horizontal fire tubes where more heat is transferred to the water. This design is called a two-pass boiler because the gases go from front to back in the first pass and back to front in the second pass before they are transported by the flue pipe to chimney. Some steel boilers include a third pass through fire tubes for increased efficiency. Some features of these boilers include low mass construction and reduced water storage for lower heat loss. Cast iron boilers are narrow sections of cast iron that are joined together. Each section contains boiler water on the inside, while hot gases pass in channels between the sections. The cast sections are joined together with either metal push nipples or non-metallic O-rings. Some cast iron boilers have wet legs or wet backs so that the combustion chamber is partially surrounded by boiler water. Water is supplied to each section through a common header at the bottom and top of each section. The water flows upward and it is heated by the hot inner surfaces of the cast iron sections. The heated water leaves the boiler through the outlet fitting and then it is piped to the radiation. Extra attention is needed when assembling or servicing sectional boilers to be sure that there is no way for air to leak into the boiler between the sections. These must be sealed tightly to prevent the entrance of secondary air that lowers operating efficiency. Firebox and combustion chambers. The burner is fired into a combustion area that may be lined with a refractory material that reflects radiant heat back to the flame. The reflected heat helps to stabilize the flame by vaporizing the fuel droplets more quickly. Dry base boilers require a combustion chamber made of an insulating material such as ceramic fiber to reduce the heat loss through the base of the boiler and to prevent burning out the base. In wet base boilers, the insulating properties of the chamber are less important because the surrounding boiler water recovers the heat. Heating surface or heat exchanger. The heating surfaces of the boiler are exposed to the hot combustion gases on one side and to the boiler water on the other side. Heat is conducted through these boiler surfaces from the hot gases to the water. Larger surface areas give better heat transfer. Many surfaces are designed with contours, fins, pins, or surface projections to increase the outer area and improve the gas side contact. The heat transfer surfaces must be kept clean so that good heat exchange can take place. Soot deposits on the heating surface act as an insulator. Baffles or turbulators. Baffles and turbulators are objects placed in heating passages to redirect the gas flow for better heat transfer. Fire tube boilers use turbulators to prevent the flow of hot gases up through the center of the tube. Some turbulators are long, narrow strips of metal that are twisted into a spiral to give a spinning motion to the hot combustion gases. Turbulators should always be put back into the tubes after the boiler is cleaned. If they are damaged or badly corroded, they should be replaced with new ones. Figure 13-12. Insulation. Boilers and furnaces have thermal insulation on the outside of the heat exchanger to reduce heat loss from hot surfaces. The outer jacket or casing must be securely fastened to minimize heat loss. Boiler ratings. Cast iron and steel boilers are tested to verify heating capacity and efficiency. The Air Conditioning Contractors of America, ACCA, publishes boiler ratings in its IBR Residential Hydronic Heating Guide. Listings provided in the guide show the boiler's BTU output and its annual fuel utilization efficiency, AFUE. The AFUE is calculated based on the testing procedure specified by the U.S. Department of Energy. The gross output is the total heat delivery in BTUs per hour that the boiler will deliver. The net rating deducts a piping and pickup factor equal to 15% of the gross output for hot water boilers. This factor takes pipe heat loss and boiler warm-up time into account. This is important to assure that the boiler will deliver adequate heat at the coldest times of the year. The net rating should be used for selecting a boiler. NORA has taken the next step and has developed an online calculator which allows technicians to compare the efficiency of boilers by inputting the amount of energy to heat the home and provide domestic hot water. See Figure 13-13. One of the features of hot water heat is its flexibility. There are a wide variety of different hot water piping systems in the field. Each is designed for specific application and has its advantages and disadvantages. The following is a brief description of some different hot water piping systems a technician is likely to encounter. Series loop. The most common is the series loop. It is the least expensive and easiest to install. See Figure 13-14 following page for three examples of series loop systems. Series loop systems feature a single pipe that goes from the boiler outlet through each piece of radiation and back to the boiler inlet. One of the series loop's biggest advantages is that it will supply heat to each of the heat emitters with a minimum of piping and fittings. No special valves or fittings are required. The disadvantage of this system is that the heat delivered to the last heat emitter is less than that delivered to the first. One pipe system. This system also features single pipe that connects the boiler supply to the return while supplying the radiation. What makes it different from the series loop is all of the sections of radiation are connected to the single pipe main by the use of a standard T and a special T that forms a branch of the main circuit. See Figure 13-15 on the following page. The special T is called by many names, including one pipe, Venturi, monoflow, and jet, and it serves the purpose of directing the flow of water so that each section of radiation is supplied with the water at approximately the same temperature. Figure 13-16 shows the specialties required for single-pipe systems. Two-pipe system. This system incorporates the use of a separate supply and return line from the boiler to each heat emitter. The preferred way to pipe this. The first piece of radiation to be taken off the supply is the last returned to the boiler. Likewise, the last supplied is the first returned. This produces a uniform and balanced design that requires no special valves or fittings. See Figure 13-17 on the following page. Components of hot water heating systems. Heat emitters, aka radiation. Hot water is an easily adaptable and transportable medium that lends itself to all sorts of radiation. The five most common types of heat emitters are the conventional radiator, the convector, the fan coil unit, baseboard, and radiant panel. Conventional radiator, usually made of cast iron sections that either rest on the floor or mount on the wall. Radiators are normally found in older systems. Convector. A series of fin-tubed sections enclosed within a cabinet. They are constructed of either cast iron sections or steel. Baseboard radiation. Constructed of cast iron panels or copper pipe covered with aluminum fins that create surface area for heat transfer. In larger system applications, the pipe and fins can be constructed of steel. Fan coil or unit heater. Coils of fin-tubed element with a fan that blows air over the coils. They are especially suited to rooms where there is little wall space available, such as kitchens and baths. They are also popular in garages and commercial applications. Radiant or panel heating systems. Serpentine loops of non-fin pipe in floors, walls, or ceilings that circulate low water temperature. Residential radiant heat systems are becoming very popular in new homes. The piping can be filled with antifreeze and run from a separate heat exchanger or boiler for heating garages, driveways, and sidewalks. Circulator. The circulator is the key to the proper function of today's hot water heating systems. Circulators create a pressure differential in the piping that produces flow in the system. The circulator motor rotates an impeller that pushes heated water outwards into the piping. As the water is pushed away, cooler water is pulled from the system into the impeller. This movement of water creates head pressure, figure 13-18. Hot water systems work best when the circulator is located on the supply line and located so it pumps away from the expansion tank as shown in figure 13-19. Unfortunately, some systems, especially older ones, often have the circulator on the return piping, figure 13-20. Expansion tank. All hot water heating systems need an expansion tank. As water is heated, it expands. Water cannot be compressed. In a closed system, it has nowhere to expand as it is heated, so the pressure increases instead. If nothing is done to address this, every time the burner came on, the relief valve would open. The expansion tank solves this problem. It is a tank full of air with a flexible diaphragm installed in the system. When the burner fires, the water expands, pushes against the diaphragm, and compresses the air in the tank. When the burner shuts off, the water cools, and the compressed air expands and pushes the water back out of the tank. Originally, all tanks were hollow steel cylinders. These tanks worked on the principle that as the system was filled with water, a cushion of air was trapped in the tank, and as the system water expanded, the air compressed. On cooling of the system, the water would contract and the air would decompress. Unfortunately, every time the water cooled, it would also absorb some air from the tank and carry it into the system. Eventually, all the air would be removed from the tank and it would become waterlogged and require service. The steel tank has been replaced by the flexible diaphragm design, figure 13-21. These tanks are pre-pressurized to 12 pounds per square inch and have advantages over the old design. 1. Smaller size, about one-third to one-half the size of the older tank. 2. The flexible diaphragm keeps the water and the air separated, so the cooling water cannot absorb air from the tank. It cannot become waterlogged unless the diaphragm leaks. Pressure-reducing valve. Hot water systems must be pressurized to push water out of the boiler and up to the system. The pressure-reducing valve allows for the automatic filling and maintenance of the heating system water pressure. This valve is adjusted by the technician to reduce incoming service water pressure, greater than 80 psi, to the pressure required by the system. It takes 1 psi of water pressure to push water 2.3 feet up a pipe. Typical residential systems operate at 12 pounds per pressure because that much pressure will push water up 27.6 feet, the sufficient height to heat a radiator up in the attic of a two-story home. The factory setting of 12 psi is almost always adequate for residential applications. Figure 13-22. Pressure relief valve. The pressure relief valve protects the boiler and system from high pressure conditions. Its discharge should be piped to an area where the released water will not scald the occupants. Relief valves should always be sized to boiler manufacturer specifications. Residential hot water boiler relief valves are set to open at 30 psi. Flow control valve. The flow control valve is used to prevent gravity circulation on a forced hot water heating system. It is a check valve opened by the circulator's force so that heated water can travel through the system. See Figure 13-23 on the following page. Air elimination or control. Water holds a great deal of air in suspension. Cold water holds more air than warm water, and as water is heated, the air is released. If air gets trapped in the system, it can stop the flow of water to that part of the system and cause a no-heat call. Air vents release air from the system and are often installed at the highest point to keep air from accumulating. In addition, most systems, with the exception of the series loop, have air vents installed in each piece of radiation. Series loop systems typically have air removed through purge valves located in the return piping. Air separators remove the air from the water being pumped to the boiler and should be located in the supply piping. Figure 13-24 shows the cross-section of an air separator and the installation of one on a steel expansion tank system. System zones. Hot water systems are easy to zone or break into separate heating circuits or areas. The two primary ways to provide for zone control are multiple zone valves with one circulator or individual circulators for each zone. Zone valves are 24-volt valves that provide control to either a circuit or a piece of radiation. Figure 13-25 shows zone valves. They can also be the non-electric type installed on each piece of radiation. Combinations of these two types can be very effective and provide positive, efficient, and inexpensive total comfort control. For more information on hot water heating systems, see NORA's publication, Advanced Hydronics, available at noraweb.org/advanced-study-manuals. Part 3. Steam Heating Systems. Just like hot water boilers, steam boilers are heat exchangers that use the heat from the flame to heat water. A key difference is that steam boilers are only partially full of water, so that when water is heated, it turns into steam and expands by 1,700 times. It is this expansion that pushes the steam into the heating system. All that needs to be done is to get the air that is in the system out of the way, and the steam will rush in. Steam pressure. The job of steam pressure is just to overcome the friction that steam meets as it works its way around the system. Enough steam pressure must be supplied by the boiler to overcome the system piping friction. The pressure needs is remarkably low, less than 2 psi in a typical residential system. Raising the pressure higher than 2 psi will cause problems. Steam is compressed when pressure is raised. When steam is compressed, it takes up less space. It also begins to move more slowly. It takes longer for high-pressure steam to get out of the heat emitters than it does for low-pressure steam. Also, high-pressure steam, since it's more tightly packed, will take more water out of the boiler than low-pressure steam. This can lead to low-water problems back at the boiler. Steam travels through a system because of subtle differences in pressure. Besides friction, the condensing of the steam in the heat emitters also leads to a difference in pressure throughout the system. Since all the air vents are open when the system is idle, the inside of the piping system is at atmospheric pressure, and the steam begins to move from the higher pressure in the boiler to the lower pressure in the system. As soon as the steam begins to move, it also begins to condense into water. When the steam condenses, it leaves a partial vacuum in its place. Since steam occupies about 1,700 times the volume of water, when it condenses, it shrinks to 1/1,700th of the space it occupied as steam. This creates a partial vacuum that makes the steam travel to the heat emitters. This is why circulators aren't needed to move steam. The boiler's job is to simply get the steam, a gas, out of the last heat emitter before it condenses into water, a liquid. The importance of the piping around the boiler. Today's replacement steam boilers typically contain much less water than the boilers they replace. As boilers become smaller, the piping around them becomes more and more important. For a replacement boiler to work properly, careful attention must be paid to the boiler manufacturer's piping instructions. Here are a few of the things the boiler manufacturers generally specify. allow at least 28 inches between the center of the gauge glass and the bottom of the steam header. Use full-size risers to the header. Pipe the system takeoffs at a point between the last riser to the header and the equalizer. Pipe swing joints into the header. Use a reducing elbow to connect the header to the equalizer. The dimension labeled A in figure 13-26 represents the distance that must be maintained between the center of the gauge glass and the bottom of the lowest dry return in the system. Dimension A. In one-pipe systems, dimension A must not be less than 28 inches. Dimension A provides the force that pulls the condensate back into the boiler. Without it, water will back up into the horizontal piping and block the takeoffs to the heat emitters. New steam boilers must be skimmed. The water side of steam boilers must be cleaned after insulation to remove substances that can cause foaming and surging of boiler water. It often pays to let the system run for a few days before cleaning to let the cutting oil and dirt have a chance to settle on the surface of the water, figure 13-27. Skimming the boiler is the best way to remove cutting oil, grease, sludge, etc. from the system. It includes using or inserting a 1 1/4 inch or larger nipple into the horizontal tapping above the waterline, raising the waterline to the level of the nipple, draining water slowly until it runs clear and clean. Before skimming or cleaning any boiler, check the manufacturer's instructions for their recommendations. One-pipe steam system. One-pipe steam takes its name from the single pipe that connects each radiator to the steam main. Both steam and condensate travel in this pipe, but in opposite directions. This is what often makes one-pipe steam so difficult to manage. When steam and condensate travel in opposite directions, close attention must be paid to the size and pitch of the pipes. The pitch must be at least 1 inch for every 20 feet. See figure 13-28 for the layout of a one-pipe steam system. When replacing a steam boiler, be sure to maintain the pitch of all the piping. If the piping is improperly pitched, heat emitters piping can bang and air vents can spew water and steam. Relief valve. The relief valve protects the boiler against damage caused by high pressure. On steam boilers, the relief valve is set to open at 15 psi. Gauge glass. The gauge glass shows where the water is in the boiler. Expect to see some minor movement in the water line. Anything between 1/2 and 3/4 inch of up and down movement is normal. Automatic water feeders. An automatic water feeder is sometimes installed to maintain a safe minimum water level. While it is not essential to the system's operation, an automatic water feeder is a useful backup safety device. Main vents. Install main vents near the end of every main so steam will travel very quickly to every radiator in the building. If the main vents are working properly, steam will arrive at each radiator at about the same time. For more information on steam heating systems, see Nora's publication, Advanced Steam, available at noraweb.org/advanced-study-manuals. Part 4, Domestic Hot Water. Fuel-fired appliances offer an excellent way to heat domestic hot water for use in showers, baths, lavatories, clothes washing, and dishwashers. The production of reliable, inexpensive, and efficient domestic hot water provides for the health and comfort of customers and is one of our industry's strong points. Domestic hot water systems fall into two main groups, direct and indirect. A direct system is one in which the water is heated directly by the heat from the flame. There is combustion gas on one side of the heat exchanger and domestic water on the other. With indirect systems, boiler water is used to heat domestic water. There are two types of indirect systems. The storage system, where the water is heated and stored for later use in the tank, and the instantaneous or tankless system, where the water is heated as it is drawn to the fixtures. Direct-fired water heating. Direct-fired water heaters use a tank which sits over a combustion chamber and is surrounded by insulation or an outer casing. A burner fires into the combustion chamber under the tank, and the hot combustion gases heat the water in the tank. There are two designs of water heaters: the rear flue heater, where the gases pass around the tank and vent out the back of the heater, as shown in Figure 13-29, and the center flue heater, where the gases pass through a freeway in the center of the tank and vent off the top of the heater, as shown in Figure 13-29. Oil-fired direct water heaters are typically glass-lined steel tanks that are constructed of steel and coated on the inside with a ceramic material. This coating helps protect the tank from rusting and corrosion. However, the ceramic material is not impervious to water, and an anode or sacrificial rod made of magnesium is immersed into the tank water. This rod will break down and give itself up to protect the tank from the corrosive properties of the air and chemicals present in the water. These anode rods should be checked routinely and replaced when necessary. Indirect fired water heating. There are a variety of indirect water heating systems. Tankless coils. There are two types of tankless coils used to generate domestic hot water. They offer the least initial expense and least efficient means of generating domestic hot water with a fuel-fired appliance. 1. Internal tankless coils are made of thin copper tubing attached to a steel mounting plate. The coil is placed into the water and/or steam jacket of a boiler, and the coil plate with a gasket is then bolted to the boiler shell. This system requires that boiler water temperature be maintained high enough to heat the water as it passes through the coil. There is no storage capacity in this system, and during heavy draw, it is unable to provide enough hot water due to its limited capacity. See Figure 13-30. External tankless coils are steel tanks with a coil inside. See Figure 13-31. Boiler water is piped into the tank, and it is kept hot by gravity or forced flow circulation. Tankless coil with a storage tank. This system, often called an aqua booster, is a combination of storage tank and internal tankless coil. It provides much more domestic hot water than the tankless coil alone. Water is heated by the coil and stored in the tank. The tank temperature is maintained by a recirculation loop that allows the water to get back to the coil by forced circulation. Forced circulation is maintained by a non-corrosive circulating pump, usually made of bronze or stainless steel. The temperature in the tank is controlled by an aquastat installed inside the tank. See Figure 13-32, following page. External flat heat exchangers. Many new systems feature an updated, much more efficient version of the external tankless coil called a flat plate heat exchanger. It is made of a series of wafers or plates with internal porting. The plates alternate between boiler water and domestic water. See Figure 13-33. These devices can be used either standalone or in conjunction with a storage tank. Indirect storage tank water heaters. The indirect storage type heater, also called a coil tank or indirect fired unit, is a storage tank with a coil of copper inside. The domestic water surrounds the coil and is heated by the boiler water that circulates through the coil. They are piped and controlled the same as an additional zone to the heating system and may be used on both hot water and steam systems. Since boiler water is circulated, a standard circulator can be used rather than a more expensive, non-corrosive one. The domestic water temperature is controlled by an aquastat that turns the circulator and burner on and off. Although these units are more expensive than tankless coils, their excellent warranties, improved efficiency, and high recovery rates makes them very popular. Figure 13-34 shows an indirect storage type water heater. Water heater components. A water heater is a closed vessel filled with water, normally under city water pressure. When the tank is heated, the tank must contain and store two forms of energy, heat and pressure. If the city water pressure is lost, the tank must also be protected against excess vacuum. Relief valves. All water heaters with storage capability must have a temperature, pressure, T and P relief valve that is spring-loaded, which will discharge water, relief if the temperature and/or pressure in the tank becomes too high. The valve must be installed into the tank water directly, so it will adequately sense the temperature in the tank. There should never be any type of shutoff devices installed on either the inlet or outlet side of the valve. There should also be a blow-off valve installed on the outside of all pressure-type valves to direct the hot water to a safe location, 6 inches off the floor, to avoid injury to anyone nearby. Vacuum relief valves. Some manufacturers and local authorities require protection from a vacuum being exerted onto the tank. If a vacuum occurs, the vacuum relief valve automatically vents the closed system to the atmosphere and allows air to enter and prevent conditions that could damage the water heater. A mixing, aka tampering, valve is used to control the temperature of the water being delivered to the fixtures. In tankless coil applications, the temperature of the water that has been sitting in the coil immersed in hot boiler water has the potential to scald on an initial hot water draw at the fixtures. As hot water draw continues, the temperature of the hot water that has passed through the coil will not be as hot. In order to avoid the potential for scalding and to balance the temperature of the water supply during a draw, a mixing valve is used. A mixing valve has 3 ports for piping connections, one for the hot discharge side of the water heater, one for a cold water connection, and one for the hot water supply to the fixtures in the house. The mixing valve is a simple device that contains an element that senses the temperature of the water being supplied from the water heater and then mixes an appropriate amount of cold water to provide domestic hot water at the desired temperature. These valves are adjustable so the temperature of the water may be regulated to satisfy individual preferences. The elements in these valves are susceptible to liming from the minerals in fresh water and require periodic replacement. Rebuilding kits are readily available. When installing a mixing valve, follow the manufacturer's instructions. Some mixing valves may need to be installed at a level of 8 inches to 12 inches below the heater so that they will be protected from a heat buildup while not in use. The dielectric fitting protects the water heater or storage tank against the galvanic reaction caused by the use of dissimilar metals and stray current corrosion. These fittings come in many sizes, materials, and types, and can also be used in place of pipe thread or solder, adapter or union. Backflow preventers, pressure-reducing valves, and thermal expansion tanks. Although these items are not always present, they may be required by local codes or manufacturer specifications. Since the domestic water heater or storage tank is a closed system, when a backflow preventer or pressure-reducing valve is installed, it should be protected by an expansion tank specifically designed for the purpose. These expansion tanks should always be installed on the cold water line, before the tank, but after all service valves and pressure-reducing devices. The use of these tanks will prevent nuisance relief valve discharges and premature water heater failures due to excessive pressure buildup.